Welcome to the Voice of America in Mandarin.
这里是美国之音的中文广播，现在就开始今天下午六个小时的中文节目。
各位听众好，今天是六月二号，北京时间下午五点，现在请听国际新闻。索马里首都的目击者说，武装分子星期三袭击当地一家大酒店的时候，至少有十个人丧生，超过十五个人受伤。索马里一名议员对美国之音表示，两名国会议员在袭击中丧生。他说，还有一名国会议员受伤。一名当时在酒店的议员描述袭击的情景说，我在房间睡觉，被巨大的爆炸声震醒，飞来的一扇门和窗户砸到我的身上，我从酒店的后门跑出来，死里逃生。一名为美国之音工作的自由撰稿人报道说，他看到酒店的门前躺着五具尸体。朝鲜劳动党国际部部长李朱镛访问中国，显然是在争取修复跟中国这个主要盟友和资助国的关系。两国因为平壤持续发展核武器和弹道导弹项目而关系紧张。李朱镛星期三抵达北京，跟中共中央对外联络部部长宋涛举行会谈。中国共产党表示，中朝双方代表重申了两国之间长久的友谊，保证要进行双边交流，促进地区和平与安全。朝鲜在年轻的领导人金正恩的领导下，无视联合国的多项制裁，一再进行核武器和弹道导弹试验，导致北京对朝鲜越加恼火。星期三，美国加州大学洛杉矶分校发生枪击事件，有两个人遇难，当局随后暂时封锁了校园。洛杉矶的警察局长贝克说，枪击是一起谋杀和自杀事件，两名受害者均为男性成年人。当局说，在当地时间上午十点左右，有人报告在校内一个工程教学楼的附近发生枪击。加州大学洛杉矶分校位于洛杉矶的韦斯特伍德区，在校的学生人数超过四万人。枪击事件发生之际，期末考试下个星期就将在校内进行。最近两年，来到美国的合法跟非法的移民在不断的增加，达到了21世纪以来前所未有的水平，其中绝大多数来自亚洲而不是拉美。这种情况就发生在选举年，发生在总统参选人川普承诺要在美国跟墨西哥的边界上建起一堵墙，阻止非法移民进入美国的时候。移民研究中心提供的新的发现显示，2014年和2015年有300多万合法的移民进入美国，比两年以前增加了 39%。这项调查是根据美国出入境的人数统计出来的，其中包括那些持有长期签证的移民。移民研究中心星期三发表的一份声明说，影响移民的因素或许包括经济的好转、移民法执法力度的减弱，以及美国合法移民制度的性质。这个制度给学生和外籍劳工提供了长期临时签证的选择。法国铁路工人星期三举行罢工，对他们的工作条件和法国劳动法修改议案提出抗议。罢工导致法国大约一半的铁路运输暂停。法国铁路协会表示，法国大约 40% 的高速列车和超过一半的区域列车取消运行。新闻报告完了，这是张燕从美国首都华盛顿向各位报告的。
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Moore. Welcome to Functioning in Business.
各位听众好，我是杨晨，欢迎收听商务通英语。
Functioning in Business is an intermediate level business English course with a focus on American business practices and culture.
商务通英语是中等程度的商务英语课程，课程题材以美国的商业实践和文化为主，通过电台播音室里的采访和绘画讲授美国英语。今天我们复习本星期的课程，第一课的题目是住店登记第四部分，着重讲怎样澄清问题。今天接受采访的人是史杰饭店的接待员 Marsha Waters 女士。
Last week, we talked with Charles Blake about a business trip he took to the United States last year. As you recall, Mr. Blake works for International Robotics, a Chinese company. Mr. Blake went to San Francisco to meet with Michael Epstein of Advanced Technologies. While Mr. Blake was in San Francisco, he stayed at the Embassy Suites Hotel. Last week, we heard a recording of Mr. Blake's conversation with the receptionists at the Embassy Suites Hotel. Today, we will talk with the Embassy Suites receptionist, Ms. Marsha Waters.Welcome to Functioning in Business, Ms. Waters.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. Please call me Marsha.
Okay, Marsha. Tell me, Marsha, have you worked at the Embassy Suites for a long time?
I've been there about 5 years.
And you work at the reception desk, isn't that right?
Yes. I register the new guests, and I help guests who have questions or problems.
Oh, what kinds of problems?
Well, for example, sometimes people need help operating the TV. If they're having trouble...I send someone to their room to help them. Or sometimes people want to change rooms. We had one person who was in a non-smoking room and wanted to change to a smoking room. We couldn't give him a smoking room because there were none available. Then we found out that the person was smoking in the hallway, and that's not allowed.
So what happened?
We had to explain that he could only smoke in designated areas. Then, the next day, we were able to move him to a different room.
Marsha, can you tell our listeners what kinds of services you offer at the Embassy Suites?
Well, one important service we offer is a business center. Our business guests can go to the business center to type letters or send faxes. We also have an internet connection so that they can read their email.
How convenient! What other services do you offer?
We have a great fitness center with a sauna and a jacuzzi.
That sounds like fun.
We also have room service, of course.Many of our business guests like to eat in their rooms so that they can have more time to prepare for meetings.
They work while they eat dinner?
Yes, some people do. I guess they find it easier than going out to a restaurant.
Thank you very much for joining us, Ms. Waters.
It's my pleasure.
We'll be back after a short break. Welcome back, everyone. We're here once again with Gary Engleton, our expert on business and culture.
Hello, everyone. How are you today, Elizabeth?
Very well, thank you, Gary. I'm glad that you're here because we have a very important email question on hotel charges.
Really? What is it?
One of our listeners writes, "Sometimes my hotel bill is larger than I expected." In the United States, what extra charges are there in hotels?
That's an excellent question.When you are staying in a hotel, it's a good idea to ask a lot of questions about what is free and what has an extra charge. Extra charges are sometimes called surcharges. They are becoming more and more frequent.
How do you find out about these extra charges?
The first thing that you should do is to look around the room for something written down. For example, there is sometimes information near the telephone about charges for local and long-distance calls.If you can't find anything in writing, you should definitely ask at the front desk.
That's a good idea. What other kinds of extra charges are there?
Well, for example, many hotels have drinks and snacks in small refrigerators. These are not free. Make sure you know how much everything costs before you drink or eat anything. And you can have food brought to your room. That's called room service. It is usually fairly expensive.Look for a menu in the room that lists the prices.
Are there any other surcharges to be careful of?
Well, some hotels offer movies in your room for an extra charge. And remember, tax will usually be added to the room charge. In some U.S. cities, this tax can be 15% or even more. Well, I think that I've covered most of the extra charges. Other facilities like swimming pools, exercise equipment, and even daily newspapers are usually free.
Thanks, Gary. That was extremely helpful.
Good evening. May I help you?
Yes, my name is Allison Peters. I have a reservation.
Let me take a look. Yes, I see you have a room reserved through April 4th.
Actually, I'll be leaving on the morning of the 5th.
Oh, really? I thought you told us you would be checking out on the 4th.
No, I believe I said I would be checking out on the 5th. Let me check my confirmation notice. Here it is. Oh, my goodness, you're right. Can I extend my stay through the 5th?
That's not a problem. I'll change your reservation for you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Gary 提示。
Welcome back. It's time for Gary's tips. What's your topic for today, Gary?
Today, I'll be talking about clarifications. Last week, we talked about the importance of confirming information, especially information about plane and hotel reservations. It's important to confirm because sometimes a hotel clerk or a travel agent might have incorrect information. If you disagree with what the clerk or agent says, there are some polite ways to correct the person. This is called making a clarification. One way to begin a clarification is to use the word actually. Let's listen again to part of the business dialogue. You'll hear Ms. Peters clarifying that she is staying through April 5th.
Good evening. May I help you?
Yes, my name is Allison Peters. I have a reservation.
Let me take a look. Yes, I see you have a room reserved through April 4th.
Actually, I'll be leaving on the morning of the 5th.
Another polite way to make a clarification is to say, I believe. Let's listen again to the business dialogue. Ms. Peters clarifies that she will be checking out on the 6th.
Yes, I see you have a room reserved through April 4th.
Actually, I'll be leaving on the morning of the 5th.
Oh, really? I thought you told us you would be checking out on the 4th.
No, I believe I said I would be checking out on the 5th.
It turns out Ms. Peters is wrong about the dates of her reservation. But by being polite, Ms. Peters maintains a good relationship with the desk clerk and is able to change her reservation. So remember, it's important to correct people if they have the wrong information about your reservations. But it's best to be polite when you make a clarification. Well, that's all we have time for today on Gary's Tips.
本星期第二课的题目是住店登记第五部分，重点讲解怎样客气地向别人提出要求。首先请听电话采访。
Last week, we heard part of a conversation between Charles Blake and the hotel receptionist at the Embassy Suites Hotel. Today, we'll be hearing the rest of the conversation during Mr. Blake's check-in. I have Mr. Blake on the phone. Hello, Charles.
Hello, Elizabeth.
How are you doing?
Just fine.
Last week, we listened in while you checked in at the Embassy Suites.
That's right.
Tell us again why you were in the San Francisco area.
I was on business. I had plans to meet with Michael Epstein of Advanced Technologies. I wanted to talk to him about selling industrial robots to his company.
Now, let's hear the second half of your conversation with the hotel receptionist as you check in.
Okay.
That room is $120 a night.
Okay, fine.Can I use my credit card for that?
Yes, certainly, sir. Can I make a print of your card before we check you in?
Sure. There you are.
Okay, thank you. All right, fine. We're all set here, Mr. Blake, and I'll get the bellman right away. We'll get you to your room.
Oh, by the way, there's a chance I'll be staying one more day, so I might be leaving on Saturday. Is that okay?
Let me check. Well, sir, I'm afraid we're all booked up for Friday night, but something may open up.Can I let you know?
Okay. If you could let me know as soon as possible, I would appreciate it.
Yes, we can do that for you, sir. Okay, and here's your key, sir. I'll get the bellman. Bellman, front!
Let's talk a little about the conversation we just heard.
All right.
I see you asked if you could stay an extra night at the hotel.
That's right. Originally, I planned to stay 4 nights and to leave on Friday. When I arrived in San Francisco, I decided to stay an extra day so that I would have more time to meet with Mr. Epstein.
The receptionist said the hotel was booked up on Friday night. Were you worried that you wouldn't be able to get a room?
A little, but she said that something might open up.
Were you able to get a room?
Yes, I was. There were some cancellations at the hotel, and so I was able to stay until Saturday morning.
Thanks for talking with us again, Charles.
It was my pleasure.
Let's take a short break. Welcome back to Culture Tips. We're here again with our business language expert, Gary Engleton.
Hello, everyone.
Well, Gary, today we have an email about a very important and complicated subject.
Really?
Yes, here it is. When I stay in hotels in the United States, who should I tip and how much money should I give them?
Those are great questions. Tipping is very complicated. But let me give you some guidelines.
That would be very helpful.
We generally tip people in lower-paying jobs, like waiters. These people are paid by the hour, and they depend on tips for extra money. The people who work at the front desk are salaried workers and are paid more, so we don't tip them. We also don't tip managers.
Oh, and how much money should you give people when you tip them?
First, let's talk about the easy situations. In the hotel restaurant, you should give the waiter or waitress an extra 15 to 20% of your bill. And you should tip taxi drivers about 15% of the fare. If the taxi driver carries your bags, you should give a little more. For most other services, tip $2. For example, you should tip anyone who carries your bags to your room. That person is called the porter or bellman. If a porter carries a lot of luggage for you, tip more than $2.
And what about the maid?
$1 or $2 per day is good. You can leave the tip in your room when you check out.
Thank you, Gary. Your information has been really helpful. First, let's listen to a conversation between Mr. Myers and the bellman.
Oh, excuse me. I wonder if you could help me with my bags.
Sure, I'll be glad to help. Which floor is your room on?
Here's another short conversation between Mr. Myers and the desk clerk.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Could I possibly use your fax machine? I'd like to send a fax to my office.
Yes, of course. The fax machine is right over there, behind the desk.
Now let's listen to the third conversation, again between Mr. Myers and the desk clerk.
Front desk, may I help you?
Hello, this is Mr. Myers in room 212.
What can I do for you, Mr. Myers?
I lost a button, and I need to sew it back on. Do you happen to have a needle and some thread?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we do.
If you could send them up to my room, I'd appreciate it.
No problem. I'll have them sent up right away.
Thank you.
Now it's time for Gary's Tips with Gary Engleton.
Hello, everyone. Last week on Gary's Tips, we talked about requests. We're going to talk some more about requests today. We've already said that a polite way to make a request is to use can or could. For example, you might say, "Could you send a hamburger and an iced tea to room 219, please?" Today, we're going to talk about some even more polite ways to make a request. One way is to begin your request with, "I wonder if." Let's listen again to the first business dialogue. Listen for Mr. Myers saying, "I wonder if."
Oh, excuse me. I wonder if you could help me with my bags.
Sure, I'll be glad to help. Which floor is your room on?
Another polite way to begin a request is to say, Could I possibly, or could you possibly? Let's listen to Mr. Myers again, asking to use the fax machine. He starts his request with, Could I possibly?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Could I possibly use your fax machine? I'd like to send a fax to my office.
Yes, of course. The fax machine is right over there, behind the desk.
In today's business dialogues, we heard a third way to make a polite request. You can use the expression, I would appreciate it if. You can say, I would appreciate it, either at the beginning or at the end of your request. Let's hear Mr. Myers again as he asks for a needle and thread.
Do you happen to have a needle and some thread?
Yes, as a matter of fact, we do.
If you could send them up to my room, I'd appreciate it.
No problem. I'll have them sent up right away.
Thank you.
In today's dialogue, we also heard Mr. Blake use the expression, I'd appreciate it. Let's listen again.
Oh, by the way, there's a chance I'll be staying one more day, so I might be leaving on Saturday. Is that okay?
Let me check. Well, sir, I'm afraid we're all booked up for Friday night, but something may open up. Can I let you know?
Okay. If you could let me know as soon as possible, I would appreciate it.
Today you heard three different ways to make polite requests. In a business situation, it's good to be extra polite when you are asking for a favor. You will want to use these polite ways to make your requests. I hope today's tips were helpful.
In 我们重点学习拒绝别人的请求时应当使用的表达方式。首先是访谈时间。
Our guest today is Ms. Bailey. Ms. Bailey is a manager at Universal Bank. Welcome to the program, Ms. Bailey.
Thank you very much.
Today we're going to talk about money and business travel. We'll be talking about changing money and cashing checks. Ms. Bailey, does your bank handle foreign currency?
Oh, yes.People can exchange dollars for all the major foreign currencies at our bank. We also get a lot of foreign business travelers who want to change their money for dollars.
Can they get good exchange rates at your bank?
Well, yes. The rates are quite good, but there is a fee for exchanging currency.
Ms. Bailey, I have a recording of a conversation between a bank teller and a British customer. The customer changes some money and then tries to cash a personal check. The bank teller refuses to cash his check.Shall we listen to the conversation?
Sure, let's listen.
May I help you?
Yes, can I change British pounds for American dollars here?
Yes, certainly, sir. How much would you like to change?
£100, please.
Just one moment. That comes to $168.45. Here you are, sir.
Thank you very much.
Is there anything else I can help you with?
Yes, please. Could I cash this personal check from my London bank?
I'm afraid that isn't possible.Our policy is that we do not cash out-of-town checks.
It's very important that I cash this check.
Yes, I understand, but it's against bank policy.
Could I see the manager, please?
I'm sorry, but the manager, Mr. Grover, is out right now. The assistant manager, Ms. Grace, is in. Would that be all right?
Yes, that's fine, thank you.
Certainly. One moment, please.
下面我们继续对银行经理Bailey 女士进行访谈。
Welcome back to Functioning in Business. We're talking with Ms. Bailey, a manager at Universal Bank. As you heard, Ms. Bailey, the bank didn't cash the check for the man.
That's right. It's unusual for a bank to cash an out-of-town check, especially if the check is from a foreign bank.
Do you cash personal checks at your bank?
Yes, we do. But only if the check is from a local bank. We don't cash out-of-town checks.
Thank you very much for joining us today, Ms. Bailey.
It was my pleasure.
文化点滴。
Hello again. We're here with Gary Angleton, our business language expert. Welcome back to Culture Tips, Gary.
Thanks. It's wonderful to be back. So, what's our first email question?
Our first question is, do I need a credit card to travel in the United States?
Excellent question. I would say it's very important to have a credit card. First, having a credit card makes travel in the United States much more convenient.
In what way?
Well, for example, it's impossible to rent a car without a credit card. And credit cards are accepted almost everywhere. Finally, if you carry credit cards, you don't have to carry a lot of cash.
Those are all good points.
Just make sure you get a major credit card that is accepted worldwide.
Thanks, Gary. Here's another email question about paying for things. Should I use checks in the United States?
Well, there are two important types of checks, traveler's checks and personal checks. Traveler's checks are very convenient since they are accepted in most places. They are especially helpful if you want to buy something from a small shop that does not accept credit cards.
Oh, I see.
Personal checks, however, are much more difficult to use. Generally, merchants only accept personal checks from local banks. They don't accept out-of-town checks. So when you're traveling, it's better to use credit cards and traveler's checks than personal checks.
Gary 提示。
Now it's time for Gary's Tips with Gary Angleton.
Hello there. Our function of the day is refusals. To refuse means to say that you can't or won't do something that a person asks you to do. In the business dialogue, you heard several examples of refusals. Let's replay parts of the conversation between the customer and the bank clerk. In the first example, the bank teller refuses to cash a personal check by saying, I'm afraid that isn't possible. Let's listen.
Could I cash this personal check from my London bank?
I'm afraid that isn't possible. Our policy is that we do not cash out-of-town checks.
Using the phrase, I'm afraid, is a very common way to begin a refusal. Some other examples are, I'm afraid I can't help you, or I'm afraid he's not here right now. Another way to begin a refusal is to say, I'm sorry, but... Saying that you're sorry that you can't be more helpful is a very polite way to make a refusal. Here's an example from our bank dialogue.
Could I see the manager, please?
I'm sorry, but the manager, Mr. Grover, is out right now.
Usually, after you say you're sorry, you give a reason for your refusal. For example, if someone asks you to go to lunch and you're busy, you can say, I'm sorry, but I have another engagement. If someone wants to speak to your colleague, but he's not there, you can say, I'm sorry, but he's not here right now. Let's listen to one more polite way to make a refusal. In our example from the bank teller says, Yes, I understand, but... Let's listen.
It's very important that I cash this check.
Yes, I understand, but it's against bank policy.
Usually, you say, Yes, I understand, when the other person is giving you reasons for a request, and you want to show that you heard what the person said. Let's hear the example one more time.
It's very important that I cash this check.
Yes, I understand, but it's against bank policy.
There are some less polite ways to make a refusal. Let's hear some examples of things you shouldn't say.
Could I cash this personal check from my London bank?
No, that's impossible.
It's very important that I cash this check.
I told you we can't do that.
In this conversation, the bank teller is very rude to the customer. Remember, make your refusals as polite as possible by saying, I'm afraid and I'm sorry. Well, that's all the time we have for today.
Well, our time is up. Tune in again next time for Functioning in Business. See you then.
今天的商务通英语就复习到这里。谢谢各位收听。我们下次再见。
For further study, a Functioning in Business study kit is available from your local bookstore.
为了帮助学习，商务通英语备有课本和录音带，整套辅导学习材料，听众可以去本地的书店购买。
听众朋友，下面为您播报新闻简讯。索马里首都的目击者说，武装分子星期三袭击了当地一家大酒店，造成至少10人丧生，超过15人受伤。索马里一名议员对美国之音表示，两名国会议员在袭击中丧生，他说还有一名议员受伤。一名当时在酒店的议员描述袭击的情景时说，当时他正在房间里睡觉，被巨大的爆炸声震醒，飞来的一扇门和窗砸在了他的身上。这位议员说，他从酒店的后门跑出来，死里逃生。一名为美国之音工作的自由撰稿人报道说，他看到酒店门前躺着5具尸体。据报，大多数伤亡是由一辆装满炸药的汽车引爆造成的。当时，很多人正在进行晚间的祈祷。在摩加迪沙大使酒店的突袭发生几个小时之前，据索马里官员说，激进组织青年党的最高指挥官在一次深夜军事行动中被击毙。这名青年党头目叫穆罕默德·马哈茂德，他涉嫌策划了2015年4月在肯尼亚加里萨大学学院的袭击行动。那次袭击导致148人丧生，其中几乎全部是学生。朝鲜劳动党国际部部长李柱庸访问中国，显然是在争取修复与中国这个主要盟友和资助国的关系。两国因平壤持续发展核武器和弹道导弹项目而关系紧张。李柱庸星期三抵达北京，与中共中央对外联络部部长宋涛举行会谈。中国共产党表示，中朝双方代表重申了两国间长久的友谊，保证要进行双边交流，促进地区和平与安全。星期三，美国加州大学洛杉矶分校发生枪击事件，两人遇难，当局随后暂时封锁了校园。洛杉矶警察局局长贝克说，枪击是一起谋杀和自杀事件，两名受害者均为男性成年人。当局说，当地时间上午10点左右，有人报告在校内一个工程教学楼附近发生枪击。加州大学洛杉矶分校位于洛杉矶的威斯特伍德区，在校生人数超过4万人。枪击事件发生之际，期末考试下周就将在校内进行。最近两年，来到美国的合法与非法移民在不断的增加，达到了21世纪以来前所未有的水平。其中绝大多数来自亚洲而不是拉丁美洲。这种情况就发生在选举年，发生在总统参选人川普承诺要在美国与墨西哥的边界上建起一堵围墙来阻止非法移民进入美国的时候。移民研究中心提供的新的研究结果显示，2014年和2015年有300多万合法移民进入美国，比之前的两年增加了 39%。 这项调查是根据美国出入境的人数统计出来的，其中包括那些持有长期签证的移民。移民研究中心星期三发表的一份声明说，影响移民的因素或许包括经济的好转、移民法执法力度的减弱，以及美国合法移民制度的性质。这个制度给学生和外籍劳工提供了长期临时签证的选择。法国铁路工人星期三举行罢工，对他们的工作条件和法国劳动法修改议案提出抗议。罢工导致法国大约一半的铁路运输暂停。法国铁路协会表示，法国大约40%的高速列车和超过一半的区域列车取消运行。开往伦敦的欧洲之星列车正常运行，不过开往西班牙和意大利的列车当中一半以上，以及开往比利时、荷兰和瑞士列车的25%受到影响。罢工已经给巴黎戴高乐机场的通勤列车带来不便。这次罢工是劳工组织行动的一部分，是对一项允许雇主更自由地解雇工人和延长工作时间的法案做出的回应。法国总统奥朗德的社会党政府希望新法案将提高就业、振兴经济，但工会认为这对工人的根本权利构成威胁。以上是美国之音的新闻简讯，感谢收听。
以下为您重播美国之音 VOA 卫视时事大家谈节目。因为是节目录音，请您不要拨打电话。
各位观众朋友大家好，欢迎继续收看美国之音 VOA 卫视6月1号星期三现场直播的时事大家谈节目，我是宇宙。在今年中国基层人大代表换届选举年之际，著名挺博人士组建的中国制宪党发文称，一些地区人大代表选举活动涉嫌微服潜行，未经公告便低调开始，与选举应有的公开透明、公正、平等的模式背道而驰。文章还称，中共今年年初新修订的中国共产党纪律处分条例直接把最高领导人习近平的名字也写入了规定的条款，颠覆依法治国的理念。那么地方选举的黑洞是否源于上行下效？中国离政治规矩有多远？时事大家谈首先邀请两位时评人士来进行分析。一位呢是在美国之音北京演播室的中国独立分析人士舒可欣先生。舒先生你好。好，另外一位呢是美国普林斯顿中国学社执行主席陈奎德博士，我们欢迎两位，我们也欢迎各位听众、观众和网友拨打电话参加节目的讨论，免费热线呢是400120-0551 400120-0551。好的，那么首先呢，我想问在北京的舒可欣先生，就是关于这个薄熙来这个人呢是人尽皆知，但是呢关于挺博者王征所创立的这个制宪党这个事情并不是大家都知道。那么首先我想问您，就是说能不能请您先首先的介绍一下这个制宪党是怎么一回事。那么还有呢，就是说这个制宪党现象呢在中国的这个出现呢，它究竟是一个必然的现象呢，还是一个偶然的结果？
哎，关于这个制宪党的情况呢，其实大家可以从百度上从任何搜索都可以搜索出来。
嗯，
对，就是，当年那个出了这个，薄熙来这个事情以后呢，由一个老师组建的一个这么一个政党，他的法律的根据呢是说，由于中国的政党呢都没有注册，因此呢，包括中国共产党和八大这个其他的政党，都是没有注册的，所以他认为呢，在中国的法律情况下呢，任何执政党都不需要注册，因此他就注册了这么一个政党。他的宗旨呢，就是要建立自己的这个怎么说呢，就是要以制宪为目标吧，就是要另外一个呢，就是想在支持薄熙来为首的这么一群人的这个治国理念啊。所以我觉得这件事情其实本身呢，我觉得也不是重要，因为在中国也足够宽容，但是还是最后给他们定了一个违法组织，然后就是定为违法组织。但是现在这个组织呢，据说还是在招募这个成员，并且组织的负责人自己讲，现在也有很多成员在不断的涌入，以个体经营户为主，然后也有学校的老师，还有其他的人，好像他们也比较的蓬勃，大概情况就是这样。
嗯，好，谢谢舒先生。那么刚才在屏幕上出现的是这个制宪党的发起人，也是这个挺博人，是王征老师。陈先生，我想问您，就说呢，关于这个现在制宪党呢和王征现在发展到，就他们在积极的促进在中国能够有独立的这个政党来进行对现任的政党进行挑战，来这个完成向民主的这个过渡，或者说这个转变啊。那么我想问你，就是说从薄熙来这个事件，我不得不讲一讲，回过头说说，就是说薄熙来他的这个事件的出现呢，是给中国的这个政治生态呢，究竟是起了哪一些的这个正面的这个作用？
我觉得制宪党这个事情本身就是他这个事件造成的后果之一吧。我觉得薄熙来事件，虽然我本人比较不赞成，比较反对薄熙来先生的一些政治理念，个人政治理念，但是他有他发表他的理念的那个权利，而且他的那个整个的逮捕过程大家知道是并不是合法的，就是说是一种所谓政变的形式弄的。这个我们先且不去说了，发展到王征教师他做这个制宪党这个事情本身，不管怎么说，我觉得是一个值得肯定的事情。政治行动就必须要用政治方式来解决，他也谈到这一点，我觉得这个是非常重要的。而且中国发展到目前现在这一步， 关于反对党的问题，关于政党其他政党的它的成立的合法性的问题越来越迫切，越来越提到中国人的面前。因为大家知道，如果一个国家它的政治生态里面没有一个制衡的其他的政党进行制衡，大家知道中国共产党实际上是垄断了所有的政治权利，虽然有八个所谓民主党派，但实际上这八个民主党派都是受到中国共产党操纵控制的，所以说就领导，他是在中国共产党领导之下的，所以说他不具有制衡的作用，因此有其他的政党出现是非常重要的。1998年，中国人民也有相当一部分朋友同志做了一个尝试，做了非常艰难的尝试，就是在浙江杭州成立中国民主党注册。当时曾经官方似乎犹豫了一段时间，曾经有一段时间注册似乎得到了准许，而且迅速发展到北京、天津等等进京，但是后来又被镇压下去了，又不准他们注册了。实际上我觉得这个发展到今天，这个发展是越来越迫切了。就我再一次要强调，反对党的问题，就有制衡的政治力量的问题，是中国政治的关键问题。台湾的发展就是这样，当年的台湾关于自由中国杂志，大家知道在胡适先生和雷震先生作为发行人和主编等等，雷震先生作为主编等等，这个在当时台湾的政治生态中起了非常重要的作用。后来就是要发展到要阻挡的问题，就是以这个杂志为中心阻挡的问题。雷震先生要成立中国民主党，也是中国民主党。后来到了60年，一共杂志发行了10年，到了60年，他因为阻挡的事情被逮捕，台湾的政治受到了一种夭折，但是他播下了种子，为后来的台湾的政治发展立了很重要的一个先声。
嗯，好，谢谢陈先生。那舒先生，我想问您，就是说呢，这个制宪党他的这个信件里写到的，就是这次的这个基层选举的这个换届选举年，那么在某些地方，比方说山西省呢，现在这个他的这个基层的选举呢是在悄悄的进行，能不能请您给我们的观众朋友稍微介绍一下这个情况？
好的，其实呢，我觉得制宪党写的这些东西呢，肯定是存在的，因为大家知道，中国几千年来都没有选举的习惯，而不像西方最近有美国学者研究，连海盗船的船长都是选举产生的，也就是一群强盗的首领都是选举产生的，在中国这根本不可想象。所以选举呢，在中国的人民的生活当中不是重要的事情，而能不能活着一直是重要的事情。我们前刚刚在做另外一个节目，来这之前刚做另外一个节目，讨论的是雾霾，讨论的是北京要不要增加这个拥堵费50块钱，结果闹的就是沸沸扬扬。就是目前中国的民众都能把选举当回事，还是主要的把这个生活当回事。它不像美国这个发达的这个国家，或者像英国，他们选举，我去
好，谢谢舒先生，这个信号呢不太好啊。那么
对。
好，那么陈先生，我想问您，就是刚才呢，舒先生讲到，就是说长期以来中国这个文化中呢没有缺乏这个选举这样一个文化，那么还有呢，就是从这个现实的角度来讲，人们一直是在疲于为自己怎么样能够活下去来奋斗，根本没有达到这个层次。那么这个呢，我们就不得不讲到这个关于选举素质的问题。那么现在这个中国老百姓的这个选举素质，您认为是处在这个哪一步？还有它各方面的这个民间组织的状况，以及呢，还有加上这个政府方面对这个选举呢，并不是说就并不是像西方所希望的那样用他们的这个模式来进行，那么这个之间这个互动的关系是怎么样的？那么对于中国的这个老百姓的这个政治素质来讲呢，就是能够让他们怎么样这个发展？
我同意，就是说选举目前在中国一般的老百姓心目中并不占有非常重要的第一位重要的地位，但是这个选举对于中国将来的整个的社会的将来的发展，尤其是到了一定的经济发展程度，现在中国都中产阶级也起来了，他一定要有一些政治诉求，要需要能够社会听到，或者说要表达自己的政治诉求，获得政治的政治利益，获得政治的自己的政治地位，有自己的代言人等等，这些都是将来必须要做的。如果不做的话，这个社会发展就会成为就像大家看现在看到的非常多的问题，就是说包括贪腐啊，巨大的那个不公等等各种各样的社会现象都会出来。当然目前老百姓一般的选举是对选举觉得选举离自己还太远， 因为中国60多年来从来没有过真正的选举，
嗯、
这个就是说完全就是两代人和这个选举这个事情脱节。当然就是说，你说他有多高的选举的素质，这个东西当然谈不上，因为所有的政治过程，他都要在政治过程本身中间去学习、去训练、去长大，不可能说是在你的课堂上教一个什么东西，然后他就可以就很高素质的选民，没有这种可能性。但是必须要在选举中间去，包括中共早年在延安也做过一些选举的尝试，所谓豆子的实验。当然，更不用说49年以前在国民政府统治的时期，也还是有些选举的尝试，虽然时断时续，虽然很不规范，虽然不大合乎国际的现代的标准，但是大体上还是进行了一些选举，而且有些时候还很激烈。例如在40年代末，大家都知道的那个什么李宗仁和孙中山先生的儿子的那个
孙科
的选举等等。总的来说，我觉得这些选举目前在中国目前来说还差得很远，就是说因为60多年来从来没有过真正的选举。但是并不是说没有真正的选举将来就一定不能选举了，这个人们在进行政治活动的时候，他要如果进入了政治过程，这个学习的过程快得很。包括文化革命这么混乱、这么暴虐的那个这个时代，一旦有一些缝隙，人们就迅速地学会了一些政治技巧、政治过程、政治包括组织、包括选举等等诸此类的。我想这些东西，只要是放开了一个口子，只要是我们知道，而且现在包括这个制宪党，我觉得也是一个非常好的先例。他自己开了先例，尽管受到了打压，尽管不承认他的合法性，但是他不屈不挠的还是在存在、在发展，而且也在北京也有一个办公室驻地，对不对？我想这些都是非常重要的一个开端。
反正总而言之，就是你得先上路才能这个走到目的地。
我们
如果你永远不上路，你可能就永远到不
了。我们必须在政治过程中学习政治，选举过程中学习选举，而不是说是我们先要办一个什么班来学，弄好了以后再去，没有这种事情。
好，那么舒克星先生，我想问您，就是您呢是长期致力于就是对于这个基层的这个维权方面，您有自己的这个追求和理念。那么从这方面我们来看一看，就是您的观察是怎么样？就在这个方面，他对老百姓这个他在整个的这个政治素质方面，还有这个政治理念追求方面呢，是目前一个怎么样的状况？
对对对，我完全同意一个嘉宾的说法哈。我话由于刚才信号不好没说完。其实呢，任何一个统治者集团呢，都是希望自己能够永保江山的，就是希望永远执政的。那么随着国际社会文明的发展呢，选举越来越成为你政权的正义性的几乎是一个唯一标准。过去呢，靠武力就可以了，靠自己所谓的正义就可以了。战争谁胜利了谁正义，现在一定是要靠选举。那么因此呢，其实中国政府在这方面呢，也是在尝试慢慢的往前走。当然作为执政党，他不希望走得太快啊，可能不如西方的希望那么快，不如我们中国国内一些精英想象那么快。但是我由于一直致力于基层的选举，比如说居民委员会选举、业主委员会选举，特别是业主委员会在中国的选举，它几乎是不受到这个政府的干扰。那么它几乎是在一群业主当中、两群业主当中竞争 PK， 然后也类似两党一样在这儿争权夺势是一样的。那么当然，这个实际上是一个特别仿真度特别高的一个选举活动。那么10多年来，我一直在研究和参与这些实践，有的那些这个竞选者的那个竞选广告做的跟西方的那个议员实际上是一样的，也要向选民承诺什么，做的非常好，然后互相之间有很多竞争。但是最近呢，发生了一件事，在上海，就是上个月，上海有一个小区业主委员会的选举，政府就希望操纵这个选举，然后使得业主委员会的当选人呢能够符合政府的要求。其实这个实际上是政府历来的一个习惯，就他们的是惯性。这个，所以我们当时呢，很多业主就上去游行，然后就要求开票箱，要求去检查这个票有没有造假。然后这个帖子呢，在网上大概传了一会儿就被这个封。所以大家可以看到，选举其实作为一个功课，作为一个社会发展的功课，作为民主的一个工具，已经越来越被中国的市民所关注，特
特别是发达的市民，也就是业主群体。而至于农村，对，至于农村或者普通的社区居民，他们对选举还是那么看得不重。但是在北京，我刚才来做这节目之前呢，我简单问了一些人，他们已经了解到北京市今年呢又遇到了政府的换届年，他们也关注到北京市政府人大的选举委员会开始做了工作。比如说他们已经开始进行预登记。什么叫预登记呢？就是把你的户籍，因为在北京选举，户籍和身份户籍所在地和居住所在地都可以进行选民登记，但是往往由于去以前呢没有电子化，所以呢就是发生很多重复的现象。今年呢，北京市人大常委会选举办公室呢拨了资金，每一个社区呢都有台电脑，这样呢能够防止这种情况的发生。其实我觉得中共也在慢慢的让城市的市民学会这个投票这个东西，但是我觉得真正自由的地方是在小区的业主委员会，它几乎和政治不搭界，对执政地位，共产党的执政地位没有任何的影响。它只是讨论选举业主委员会或者选个物业公司，大家要投票，但是它整个的过程造假也好，贿选也好，这个都有。所以其实我想说，执政党为了保障自己的地位，然后又为了使得自己的地位是通过选举来的，那么利用选举这个无可厚非，甚至连国民党到今天在台湾也还发生贿选的这个情况啊，这个刚刚这个都是发生的，所以更不要说中国共产党和他的基层的单位肯定会安排这个候选人，哪个候选人一定要当上。因为我们在研究中国共产党章程的时候，大家知道2002年这个在十七大，2007年十七大，江泽民做党的报告的时候就强调，要让党推荐的候选人经过法定程序成为国家领导人。然后在2012年的十八大，胡锦涛做党的报告的时候，他说要善于使党推荐的候选人经过法定程序成为国家领导人。所以在十六大、十七大的时候，共产党都确定了要让不在自己任命候选人，不在自己任命这个领导人，要通过法定程序，也就是人大的这个制度。所以中国的制度走还是在往前走啊，还是在往前走，我是这么看的。
嗯哼，好，谢谢舒先生。那么接下来我们来看一下我们的听众观众有什么话要说。那么现在正在讨论的是这个挺博组织制宪党发声，我们要求呢中国的这个政治规矩呢更加完善。那么我们来看一下我们的观众，第一位呢是河北的李先生。李先生，
喂，你好，你好。
嗯，
我觉得这个伊拉克的萨达姆被美国干掉以后呢，伊拉克的人民手里有了选举，有了选票，是吧？伊拉克人民拥有了更多的自由，但是最少有十年了，伊拉克的局势到现在都没有稳定下来。这么大的中国，这么多人口，这么多人需要生存，需要发展，需要就业，这么多社会矛盾，如果实行多党执政的民主制度的话，必将天下大乱。谢谢，再见。
谢谢河北的李先生。接下来一位是天津的张先生，你好。
好，我说一下，这个选举啊，对于国家来说，对于这个国家的人民来说，它具有一定的正义性和合理性。为什么说呢？你比如说这个国家或这个国家什么任何一个部分，不能说是每某一个党的，对吧？它的合理性就在于这儿了。所以说这个国家的人民，这个选举这个过程呢，也是对这个国家，对这个国家的人民是一个历练的过程。你比如说被选举人，他的家庭、他的婚姻、他对待事物、他对待人民、他对待国家的态度，都拿出来，让国家的人民来整个的这个很细小的一个细微的一个问题。你比如现在这个希拉里，他什么一个邮件文章，我不知道这具体情况是怎么回事，就这么一个细小的问题都可以拿出来，在人民都给你评价。所以说这个评价，这个历练的过程，对国家和人民来讲是一个教育，是一个成长的一个过程。这个国家怎么进步呢？这个人民怎么进步呢？就通过这个选举，知道什么样是正确的，知道什么样是错误的。通过这个选举，这个被选举人，比如说总统也好，什么主席也好，他这是一个很重要的一个重要的过程。为嘛现在中国现在什么道德下降啊，这各种各样的这种犯罪问题层出不穷，因为他在政治层面上他就没有这种理性， 就没有这种正义性，就没有这种合理性。所以说，这种政治层面的合理性去是这个影响到这个很多方方面面。所以说，对国家的这种这整个的正义性和合理性就产生了一个很重要的影响。你比如说，我是个市委书记，我说话我说什么就是什么，那个县委书记他我说什么也是什么。那个乡党委书记也说什么是什么，
谢谢，
你这样一来这国家就完了，就坏了。
谢谢天津的张先生。明白您的意思了。那么接下来我想问问陈博士，就是刚才这个河北的李先生谈到说伊拉克这个被美国这个建立民主体之后他们国家一片混乱，但是我想问您，就这种混乱究竟是民主造成的，还是这个国家本身的
这个国家的历史有非常复杂，大家知道这个他们宗教的派别的斗争是非常的尖锐，非常复杂，而且中间有非常多的困难。当然转型的过程中间有些处理的是不是恰当，是现在是可以回过头去讨论的。但是就是即使是这样，在伊拉克你如果是靠问进行民意调查，你问一般的老百姓说他愿不愿意让萨达姆再回来执政，再实行他那种非常强力的专制统治，大多数人现在的民调还是大多数人还是不愿意。而且我还要说的是，我们不能以个别的特例它转型的过程中间比较困难就否认了这个转型的目标的正义性。而且我们知道最近几十年来有多少所谓的第三波民主潮嘛，有多少多少的国家转型，特别是大家知道和中国相类似的共产主义国家的转型，东欧的前苏联的转型，特别是东欧的转型，很多国家虽然是大家知道中间经过了有些困难，也经过了包括经济困境等等，但是现在很多东欧的国家已经相当的走上了正常国家的正轨，而且他们已经摆脱了困境，不管在经济上特别是在政治上各方面，他们老百姓都获得了自己的权利。去问捷克的人，斯洛文尼亚的人，其他国家的等等各个国家的人，波兰的人，他们没有一个说他愿意回到共产党专权的没有任何选举的这样一个统治下去。所以说我想这个是大势所趋，不管中间有些国家还有些什么困难，转型的困难曲折，但是这个世界的大势所趋是看得非常清楚的。
接下来我们来看一下山西的高先生。山西高先生你好。
哎，你好，大家好。
请讲。
我回应刚才那位河北那位先生李先生，每天经常发言。我告诉他，伊拉克的萨达姆统治时期，萨达姆一年干掉20万人，中央电视台不会报道的。现在所谓的恐怖袭击，一年死掉2000人，中央电视台会喋喋不休地报道。这就是对伊拉克的民主转型的看法。
好，
谢谢大家。
谢谢山西的高先生。陈博士，我最后想问你，就是说说到中国现在的这个政治规矩，那么中国的这个政治规矩与世界文明的这个政治规矩之间这距离还差哪一些具体的步骤？
你要说到这个包括政治过程，我们就具体说到选举的话，选举这个东西也就是说，我也同意刚才说的，它和确实和国民素质有一定的关系。特别是我同意，就是像业主委员会这种，它现在实际上已经相当成熟了，要进行一些选举过程，是我觉得是他们是可以控制的，而且可以做得相当不错的。这个所以说在一定的程度下，但是这个总的方向就是包括每个人，甚至包括所谓的低素质的人，实际上他对自己的利益还是看得非常清楚。每个人他对自身利益的直觉还是相当准确的。所以说通过这样的一个不是砍人头的办法，而是数人头办法，这个是现在看来我们还没有任何其他的方式能够取代所谓的选举这个方式来作为这个政治领导人产生的过程等等等等，这个政治合法性从这儿产生。我觉得这个目前看来，虽然就像丘吉尔说的，虽然我们看到了民主制度的很多缺点，但是它还是在目前可能的制度中间最好的一种。虽然它是一个最不坏的制度，可以说是这样的，它是这样说的。
民主现在还不是最好，但是是比较好的一个制度。好的，那么由于时间的关系呢，挺博组织制宪党发声，习近平离政治规矩究竟有多远的讨论到这里就结束了。感谢舒可欣先生和陈奎德博士参加今天节目的讨论。以上就是今天 VOA 卫视时事大家谈的全部内容，感谢您收看。美国之音是一个自由论坛，来宾和听众观众发表的都是个人观点，并不代表美国之音。另外呢，请您使用美国之音中文网站 站上的电视节目预告，点击卫视留言板，您就可以对即将讨论的话题提出问题或者发表评论。我们等待您的留言，请在北京时间晚上8点到10点准时锁定 VOA 卫视。我是宇宙，我们下次节目再见。